morning. Okay, Tov. So, this is Reporter Horowitz, Rosh Yeshiva Dabar Yerushalayim, and the subject of the Shia, of the talk today, is how can we understand the enormous extreme opposition of many parts of the Muslim world towards the Western world, and you include in this also the Persians, the Iranians, who basically, with some variations, have adopted this aspect of the Muslim faith. When the Muslim faith, and I would say the vast majority of Muslims today still have some faith, even if they regard themselves as secularists, some of them, but beneath all this are the religious traditions of the Quran, and the simple interpretation of the Quran that on the whole, Muhammad, some say even his mother was Jewish, possible. Certainly his first wife was Jewish, and his first teacher was a Jewish scholar, a rabbi. And when he was in Mecca, he was supported by the Jews for a long time, because he, even with his revelations, was revealed to him, and he understood that Moses was a true prophet, and the people of Israel are the ones who are carrying the true faith. And he even wanted to become a full proselyte. But then he changed because the Jewish people were not ready to accept him as a proselyte, because he had his own ideas and his own visions. It's similar to the crisis today as a result of yesterday's parliament vote to limit the power of the rabbinate in many different ways, and especially with regard to proselytization. You know, basically, the government wants to accept reform and conservative streams. It was also being legitimate. It was a similar situation with Muhammad as a person. And anyone really studies the Quran and studies the history of Islam knows that there is in Islam, even today, let's say amongst the Kurds and other sections of Islam, and also one of the greatest scholars of Islam in the world is the professor of Islam, Rome University, Sheikh Palazzi, who follows what's called the moderate interpretation of the Quran. But they have developed, in more recent times, as it were, saying that many of the things in praise of Jewish observance, in praise of the land of Israel, and Jerusalem belonged to the Jews, they interpret it differently. Often instead of things that are said about Isaac, they put Ishmael. They say all types of distorted interpretations have become more popular ever since the Jewish people was returning to their homeland. So, today it's very extreme. In fact, there's never been a date when it's as extreme as now. And I want to connect with this. We had a very great saint and scholar whose influence grows all the time after his death, more and more. And he's well known as the Chofetz Chaim. But Chofetz Chaim was not his real name. What does Chofetz Chaim mean? Can any of you tell me? What's Chofetz Chaim mean? The one who desires life, because he wrote a book. If you desire life, you have to sanctify your speech. It says that in the book of Tehillim, book of Psalms. And that was one of his major first works, to where he did not want to publicize his name, made it anonymous. So it became Rosh Chofetz Chaim, even before it was known as Yisrael Meir HaKohen, Rosh Yeshiva of Radin. So this was the Chofetz Chaim. And he, they say, we don't have prophecy, but we can say he had an element of what's known as Ruach HaKodesh. The sages say, Zeo Chacham HaRoet HaNolad, a wise person amongst the Jews is someone who can foresee the future through power of his wisdom, power of his intelligence. And this is one of the lesser known predictions as a possibility. He didn't say it certainly, because we say all the punishments that are made in heaven and that are foreseen in heaven, they are possibilities that can all be changed if people change. But if people continue as they're going now in the wrong direction, that's what's going to happen. This is apparent in many prophecies. One of the reasons, which prophecy do we read at the end of the most holy day of the year? Which is the most holy day of the year? Where most Jews go to synagogue? Yom Kippur. And which is the prophecy we read near the end of Yom Kippur? Famous prophecy. None of you know? None of you know about Jonah and the whale? Prophet Jonah. Prophet Jonah. Yeah? At that time, the sin city of civilization was Nineveh. So Jonah, he really didn't want to get involved, because it says, enough, if I'll be a prophet for the Jewish people, why do I have to go to Nineveh? Of course, you've got to go to Nineveh. And tell them, because of their sinfulness, especially both their immorality, but even more so, their robbery. It was a society based upon who can grab most from others. And they were dedicated just to pleasure and to affluence. They did a lot of evil one to the other. So he was to prophesy they were all going to be destroyed. In fact, I won't go into the whole story now. He went into a ship, as you know. The ship was a trip made by representatives of the 70 nations. There were 70 passengers on the ship, and even sailors from all different nations. And there was a storm that came to sink the ship. They were all apparently going to be shipwrecked, and so therefore they said, we're all going to pray to our gods. They all went to pray to their gods. And they saw the storm was only attacking their ship. There were ships around, and they were in calm waters. But their ship was about to sink. And they said, well, is there anybody here who's not come on the deck to call to his god? And they went looking around. They find this person, Jonah, what does Jonah mean? What is Jonah in Hebrew?
Pigeon.
A pigeon. What do we know about the pigeon? From the time of the flood, what do you know about the pigeon? What's the world's symbol for peace?
Olive branch.
An olive branch in the beak of a pigeon. And that's taken from the end of the deluge. So that was Jonah. He was there to bring peace to the world that needed destruction of Nineveh. He said another 40 days. In fact, all these, they threw him out of the ship. As soon as they threw him out of the ship and drowned him, the storm stopped. So they saw this miracle, and Yonah probably told them which God is the God of the world, and they all decided they're going to become proselytes. And they made a trip specially to Nineveh to tell him, listen to this prophet Jonah is going to come to you. Maybe he'll still come to you. We drowned him, but you know what's going to happen. But we want to tell you. Anyway, so he arrived in Nineveh, he went to the king, and he had these 70 messengers who were from all the nations of the world. It was like a League of Nations. They came to the king of Nineveh, they told him the story. And then he appeared. Because, as you know, the whale swallowed him, then he was, he survived, and then he had to go to Nineveh. It's another 40 days, it's going to be nehefacha, it's going to be overturned. But what did they do? They all did teshuva. They overturned themselves. And as a result, the punishment didn't come, because they did teshuva. This is the message of teshuva for mankind. And I'll tell you something fantastic. This year. Why? Because I'll tell you something that happened. As you know, the Muslims who have been ruling in different ways over this whole area of Nineveh, Boba, around there, and in Nineveh, they've claimed for thousands of years, they've got there the burial place of Yonah. And they respected it. And more even the Jews. The Jews also, some Jews say it's not really there, it's in Eretz Israel. But the Muslims have a long tradition, this is Yonah. Yonah's burial place. One of the holy places around Nineveh. And they built a whole structure around it. Because so many people go on a pilgrimage for Yonah. And this year, one of the first acts of Daesh was to knock it down. They destroyed it. And it's very significant. Because Daesh is one of the most extreme, the other extremists as well, like Hamas, almost as extreme, perhaps some say more extreme, Al-Qaeda, were very extreme. They want to kill all those who are not believers. That's their misinterpretation of the Quran. Here you have to, can prove it. I'm just in the middle of studying a whole work by a big expert on the Quran who describes this. And the Chofetz Chaim said as follows, at the end of the First World War, when did the First World War end? Brad, when did the First World War end? You don't know the end of the First World War?
No, that's why I'm here, to learn.
You didn't learn world history? There was a world war. It started in 1914. That's when it started. And it wasn't just a small war, it was a huge war, which involved big battles in all of Europe. My father was a Prussian officer in the First World War and was wounded. My uncle was killed in that war. And I know that he was on the Prussian side. And my wife's father, he fled to England from Eastern Europe in order to escape the war. But I've got relatives the other side who on the other side, on the British side, against the Germans. And there's the First World War. When that broke out in 1914, so the Chofetz Chaim said, we have traditions of world wars. What are they called? I'm sure that you've heard. Which wars are they in biblical tradition, known by all the Christians and known by all the Jews who've read the Bible? The wars of Gog and Magog. Gog and Magog numerically is 70. That's a reference to the 70 nations of the world who initiate a world war. which involves nearly all the countries of the world. So he said, this is a world war, and there were millions of people killed in that world war. He said, in 25 years, if we don't do teshuvah, because he said it's all because of people of Israel don't do teshuvah enough, if we do teshuvah enough, the Mashiach would be here, and be no war, as it's written in the Bible, and also written on one of the buildings in the world. On which building does it say? The time will come when all the nations will say, let us go to the house of Jacob, to the mountain of God, and then let us learn from the people of Israel how to stop wars. And where's that written? On which building? That they will transform their swords into plowshares. On the United States building. Yeah, we used to say, did they say shamum or something? In English, the UN, we say useless nothing. But the truth is, their ideal is this prophecy. And they think it can be fulfilled if we'll only learn. From who can learn? Can learn from the Jewish people. It goes the other way as well. It's the Jewish people. We've got to set an example to the world. So that they will learn from our example, even more from our teachings, what's written in the book. If we show good example, they'll start reading the book. They will learn what's written in the book, not at the age of 40, but already at the age of 3 and 4 and 5, you start teaching them the book of Hashem, which God has given to the Jewish people. So, so what did the Chofetz Chaim say? He said, if we don't do teshuva, in 25 years there will be the second Melchemet Gog and Magog, which will be more severe. Unfortunately, it happened. Yeah. 25 years later was 1940. So 1939, 1940, when the Second World War started. And then he said, in 100 years, there'll be even a worse war, which some traditions say it'll only take 10 minutes, some say it'll take a bit longer. It's a tradition of the Vilna Gaon. The third Melchemet Gog and Magog will be very short, but very severe. And it's described in the prophets as an atomic war. A war with nuclear weapons. If you read, literally, you can say it's all just a metaphor. Not literal. But that's what he said. And which year is that? 100 years? It's this year. It's now. And if we look, we all wear blinkers. When we read the headlines, become so used to it, so we say, all the time, Iran is arming itself more and more. They've got behind it all is their vision of the Mahdi. They've already developed a vision of their Mashiach. And their Mashiach is going to remove all this is a distortion of the original Quran, but that's what they take. Therefore they say all non-believers have to be destroyed. And now today there's even a headline. They're trying to get hold of the Ebola infectious disease, for which there's no cure, and they want to bring it on one of the tribes that they oppose, one of the other Muslim tribes that are not so extreme. And the Kurds, for example, they're very logical. Some of them don't have much belief, but at least they're moral. They're against murder and things like that. They say, let's sort things out in a peaceful way amongst the Muslims. Why do the Muslims have to kill one another? They're killing one another with gas already. It's already happened. It's not so it's going to happen. It's happened already. And they've tried to aim at themselves against the Jews as well. That's the situation we're in today. And this is from Chofetz Chaim. And let me go a stage further. The Rambam, do any of you know, where did the Rambam live in his adult life? In Egypt. He was a doctor of whom? of the Sultan himself. Yeah. He could have chosen, because he was offered a job also as a doctor for the King of Great Britain. But he was more used to the Muslim world. He himself had to escape from extremists of the Muslims in his time, which became strong in North Africa and southern Spain. So he had to disappear from there, because there the Muslims were extreme, very anti-Jewish, very anti-Semitic. But in Egypt, they were more of the traditional Muslims who followed the real version of the Quran. And they were pro-Jewish. And they even developed great contacts between the great Jewish minds, who were great scientists, great doctors, great philosophers, and so among they were in constant dialogue with the greatest scientists and philosophers in the Muslim world, who were also very great. And they had the dialogues. And the Jews, many of the Jews, they were like also today, they were the best minds. And they connected with the best minds in the Muslim world. And that society, that's what existed in Egypt. That's why he went there. Even though he himself says you shouldn't settle in Egypt. But he went to Eretz Israel and he saw he couldn't stay there. And he had to be somewhere where he could also get a living. And it helped fellow Jews. And there were quite a lot of Jews in Egypt, because they were friendly to the Jews. So he built himself up. So I want to tell you, I'm going to bring you now from original, two letters of the Rambam concerning the Muslims, to understand a bit what is our attitude to the Muslims. So there was a certain proselyte who came from the Muslim world and decided he wants to become Jewish. And he was in touch with the great Rabbonim. He came from a Muslim country, and he had certain questions, difficulties, which he addressed to the Rambam. It's possibly met him as well, I don't know enough about this. But one of the letters of the Rambam, he addresses to Ovadia HaGer, and it's important, this letter. First he asks him, since he has become a proselyte, he addresses as follows. He calls him, these questions come from Moriv Rabbanat, from the Rabbi Ovadia, who has such intelligence. He's a Ger Tzedek. May Hashem give him reward that he's come to shelter under the wings of the Divine Presence. First question is, can you say, you are my God and the God of my fathers, and you have separated us from the other nations, and you have chosen us, Bochabonu, and we follow the inheritance from our forefathers, and you took us out from Egypt, and all these matters. Can I say them? Because they weren't my fathers. So he says, don't change anything. Because even if also whether you're doing individual prayer, or even if you're the Shliach Tzibur, the one who davens for others, we understand Avraham Avinu taught all the peoples and showed them the right path, and he showed them his unity, and he rejected idolatry, and he brought very many people Tachar comes under divine presence, and he commanded his children and his household to preserve the path of Hashem, as is written in the Torah. Therefore, anyone who becomes a proselyte unto the end of all the generations, and anyone who unites the name of the Holy One, blessed be He, as is written in the Torah, becomes a disciple of Avraham, our forefathers, member of his family. And he brought them all to the right path, just as he did. And that was his testament, his tzava'ah. So Avraham Avinu, he is the father to all his kosher seed to walk in his path. And that applies to every ger who takes on gerut. There we have to say, the God of our fathers. Avraham is your father. And you have to say, the land was given to Avraham, therefore you also have the land. When it says, you took us out from Egypt, you made miracles. If you want to change the text and say, you took the people of Israel from Egypt, or you did miracles to the people of Israel, then you can say it. Since you've come by yourself, under the wing of the divine presence, and you've joined Hashem, there's no difference, really, between you and us. And all the miracles that were made for the people of Israel, who are physical descendants, they were also made for you. Because it says in Yeshayah explicitly, let the stranger who joins Hashem, let him not say, Hashem has divided me from his people. There's no difference at all in any manner between us and between you. Therefore, you have to make the blessing who has chosen us and given us the Torah, who has separated us. And that is the real truth, true way. He separated all the Galim in the same way as he separated the Jewish people. Because the Torah was originally given for the Galim. That's why it says, by so many of the mitzvot, Chukah achat lachem v'lageh hagoh. There's one law for you, for any stranger, or the stranger will say, well, my father's never kept Pesach, but now you remember the Jewish people, Chukat, it's Chukat Olam Ledoret for all your generations. It's one Torah. And you should know that our forefathers came out of Egypt, many of them were unfortunately idolaters in Egypt, and they became intermingled amongst the nations. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu sent Moshe Rabbeinu and separate us, and brought us under the wing of the divine presence. So in a certain way, even our ancestors, they had to go through transformation. Because in Egypt, most of them lived like the Egyptians. They became assimilated. And then they had to accept the Torah, just like you accepting the Torah. And then he says, furthermore, second question. Well, that's a philosophical question. Then he says, the third question, which has to do with our subject. The Islam, the Muslims, you claim that the Muslims, from you lived a Muslim life before, they're not idolaters. But the one who taught you Torah says they are idolaters. Because they have a custom to throw stones in Mecca and Medina, when they go there, where there's a burial place, they throw stones on it. So therefore that's a form of idolatry. And therefore, the Jewish rabbi who taught you to become a proselyte, he said, you know, the Muslims are basically idolaters. So, because it's true, let's put it this way, that there were certainly many Muslim groups at the time who were not so 100% clear of their faith. But now the Rambam says this, the law is the Muslims are not considered idolaters at all. Because idolatry has gone away from their minds and their mouths. And when they declare God, Allah Akbar, God is Almighty, they make a proper yichud. You know, they pray, most of them, they pray five times a day, unifying the spiritual power of God. It's a yichud which is not in any doubt. The truth is, well, you can say, they are just deceiving us. They say that we Jews think that God has a son. They tell lies about us. And therefore we'll say they are idolaters. Not right. Shapim Dibeshov, not true. What they say about the Jewish people isn't true, because the Jewish people do not lie in matters of their faith. But if a person will say to you that when they go into the mosque, And they'll tell you that mosque is an idolatrous temple because inside the mosque there's an idol somewhere and their forefathers worshipped the idol in that house. So is that correct? Their ancestors may have had a temple to an idol, but the Muslims themselves transformed it into a place of worship of the invisible God, and their inner heart is only to heaven. And the sages say, if there's a person, Jew or Gentile, who bows down to an idol, and he thinks, but he doesn't know it, he thinks this is a true Beit Knesset, but his heart is really towards heaven. That's a, this question you can raise. What happens to a person? Does nothing about religion. Like I've heard from different Bali Tshuva, they say, which was the first prayer house you went to? So a few weeks ago I spoke to one, he told me this. Yes, I was a completely sim, knew nothing. I first heard about religion altogether in the school. And they spoke about the Christian religion. So I went to, and of course I did feel the presence of God. And I felt, even from books I'd read on science, that there was a God. So I said, well, I would like to find out how to worship this God. So I went into church. And in the church they taught me, this is God. I really thought of one God, but still in this church they said, one of the God has got three aspects to him and so on. And the truth that I joined then, because I said, look, I'm a Jew. They said, it doesn't matter, you're a Jew. Still, you should follow Jesus. So I said, who's Jesus? Well, Jesus is taught the teachings of God. And he thought, very good. So he became a Jewish Christian, and he started even becoming a missionary. He was a missionary for a few years. Until he found out more of the synagogue. He didn't even know anything about synagogue. Gradually he found out more about synagogues, and he found out there's a difference in Judaism and Christianity, and then he recognized it all wrong. So, so some kid of work got hold of him and said, go and leave all that. So he stopped being a missionary. And yeah, I've had even Talmidim the yeshiva who went through this sort of lifestyle, and they have any tattoos on their skin, Christian tattoos, but they became Bali Tshuva. So it happened all the time. He says, some of these Muslims at the beginning, he says, the average Muslim, the Rambam says, women and children, they have nothing to do with idolatry anymore. For generations. They're a bit foolish. They make a mistake. When it comes to the unity of God, they believe God is pure spirit. And therefore, he says it's true that if you go to the sources of Islam, how did it all start? Amongst the Bedouins. The Bedouins exist in the time of Avraham Avinu. The wandering people, most of them at that time, they also had a concept of an uppermost God, some of them. But worshipping, they worshipped an idol of some sort. As you should read already in the Bible, you see the other idolaters. And people who lived near oases in the desert, that was their lifestyle. And that's what Muhammad came, actually, if you read the biography of Muhammad, Muhammad tried to change that. He says, you Bedouins, you've got to stop worshipping an idol. You've got no God, it's pure spirit. It is entirely spiritual. This is the source of everything. And they agree to that. He even goes to the names, Pa'or, Marcolis. He says, but all these things, you might find there are certain vestiges of this in what they do in their mosques, some of them. But they'd be all of them true. So the rabbi, when he wanted to say this scare, that previously he was a Muslim who believed in one God. And the rabbi said to him, you know, the Muslims are idolaters. So he said, why? And this rabbi told him, you're foolish, you don't know enough. That's why you think that they're not idolaters. So he had an argument with his teacher who taught him to become a ger. So the Rambam says, no, the truth is, if he called you before you became Jewish an idolater and called you foolish for thinking that it wasn't real idolatry they did before, then really he's done wrong. Because in 36 places it says in the Torah, more than it says about a fellow Jew, that you've got to love the stranger. You've got to love them. Because they've come from so far. And they've come to accept Tarat Kafei Hashchina. At a time when Jews were constantly being persecuted, they still come. So in a very high madrega. So that he says, he called you foolish. When you really told him the truth, the Ram was considered at that time the greatest master of Jewish thought. He said, really, a person who has left his parents, his birthplace, and he's come to cling to this nation, and knows that this is the true religion, and he recognized all the other religions are really taken, it's a gnuva, they're really stolen from the Jewish religion. And so he's come, that such a person has come and now pursues the true God. And he's come, Tachvei Hashchina. And he goes and clothes himself in the dust of the feet of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the master of all the prophets and wants to fulfill all the mitzvot and wants to rejoice with the rejoicing of the saints and has thrown all the material considerations from his mind. How can you call him a kassil, a fool? Hashem did not call you a kassil, he called you a maskil. Maskil means a person who is very clever. Umeivin upikeach, a Talmud, a disciple of Rum Avinu. So he should give you all blessings. So here we find the Rambam, he's even praising Islam for being so strong in its faith. So, that's what he says here. On the other hand, there's another letter of the Rambam, which is addressed to the Jews of Teman. And the Jews of Teman, at that time, was not like Egypt, where they were friendly to the Jews. They persecuted the Jews enormously. And they murdered them. So there the Rambam says, there's no nation, he says, no group and civilization that has been so cruel to the Jewish people. And he even brings the parasha of the week. You look in the, now have a look in the parasha of the week, got a chumash there, where it says that the malach, what did the malach say to Hagar before she gave birth to Ishmael? Malach said, you've got to call him Ishmael, the God will listen. She gives him Hashem etonyech. Well, I can tell you the chapter and the verse because your pages are different to these here. So the chapter is in chapter 17. The angel appears. No, not 17, sorry. Chapter before. You should all find it inside. Chapter 16. Chapter 16, Hagar was the co-wife of Avraham Avinu. Sarah couldn't have a baby. And Hagar, her maidservant, had a baby, or was pregnant. And then she considered herself the top wife of Avram after she was pregnant. So Sarai said, look, I took you to the maidservant so that I would bring up the child. And I'm still the main wife. So Hagar became a bit arrogant. And Sarah oppressed her a bit. She said, you can't consider yourself so great. It's fantastic that you're pregnant and there'd be continuation for Avraham through the child that will be born. But I took you here because also you wanted to learn the ways of Avraham Avinu, which shows you've got to give me the right respect, and she didn't. So she afflicted her. And Hagar didn't like it, so she fled into the desert. She came in the desert, and an angel appeared to her. The angel said, yeah, you can have a child. You should call his name Ishmael. What's Ishmael? God will listen. Because she felt she was going to die in the desert, and it was better. Because she couldn't go back to the home of Avram, because Mrs. would afflict her. She felt hurt by this. Said, Hashem has heard your affliction. And then it says he's going to be very wild. His power is going to attack everybody else. But others will also attack him. So it's saying like this. Why is it called Ishmael? God will listen to prayers. And he also listens to your prayers. And he also listens to the fact that you were hurt. He listened to you when you hurt. But it should have been called Shamael. God has listened. Why is he will listen? So yesterday I explained he will listen because it's referring to a later episode. The later episode was that when the son Ishmael grew up and he was also too wild and her mother supported him because she felt he's the firstborn, so Sarah insisted they leave the house and they went in the desert. There was nothing else to drink. They were dying of thirst. So it says there, Hashem listened to Ishmael. But there's a further explanation. This teaches us in future times when the Muslims will persecute the Jews, do a lot of harm to them, and they threaten them with annihilation, then Hashem will listen to our prayers. In other words, if we do teshuvah, the Muslims will do teshuvah also, like Ishmael did teshuvah in the end. And they'll also live with us. If we don't do teshuvah, then the Muslims are going to try to kill us and kill all those who side with us. That's Yado Bakol. Because Ishmael has been given a character that is wild. There'll be times where he can curb it, that wildness, and there's sections that will accept curbing it through the mitzvot b'ninoch. But if we don't do tshuva, they're going to try to kill us and kill all civilization that sides with us. And that's exactly what's happening today. That's the concept Ishmael. Ishmael contains the name of God. The name of God as pure spiritual power, moral power. And he got the name of God before the people of Israel. Israel is also that God rules the world. Israel, he will rule the world, ultimately. But Ishmael means that God listens to all those who are suffering. And because Sarah hurt Hagar, the Ramban says, that is why Hashem allows the Muslim world to hurt the Jews and to try to drive us out from Palestine and to build up even non-conventional weapons to destroy the Jews and all their friends. So if you want to understand what's going on today, there's even more of the solutions to be found in these words of the Tanakh. And the main teaching is Yishmael will do teshuvah when we Jews do teshuvah. Okay. Now, got any questions?
So this is all in the books. History repeats itself?
No, it doesn't repeat itself.